Okay, I've been given permission to start. Thank you very much for coming. You probably already know my name's Gary Gillette. I'm doing a presentation on turkey sterns. So my premise is that from 1930 to 1940, when he retired, Turkey Stearns put together pretty much an incredible streak in the Negro American League. He also played one season in the Negro National League, and of course one season in the Negro Southern League. And I don't think there's anything revelatory about it. It's just that if you look at it, it's pretty amazing considering he was at the second half of his career. He made his major league debut in 1923, and at the end of this, he's almost 40 years old, and he was still productive. He also played for really good teams, the Chicago American Giants, Kansas City Monarchs mostly, and he was almost always either the best player or the second best player on the team, and his teams won games. So my attitude is if you were a George Steinbrenner in the Negro Leagues, major Negro Leagues in the 1930s, especially in the Western teams, and you wanted to win, you wanted to hire Turkey Stearns. So here we go. So for those of you who don't know stuff about Turkey Stearns, I know a lot of you, this will be old hat. He's a Hall of Famer, 2000. He has the most home runs in official major Negro League games, just a few more than Josh Gibson. That could change. I don't think there's any meaningful difference, but it shows you how good of a slugger he was. I think he's one of the greatest sluggers in major league history, and that was before the major Negro Leagues were, quote, elevated. He was truly a great hitter. He was a five-tool player. I show you a scouting report that Buck O'Neill donated to the Hall of Fame. Buck gave it the typical 3-8 grades, and he did this for a lot of Negro Leaguers. I just clipped Turkey Stearns out. As you can see, Turkey is 7 or 8 in every aspect of the game, which is amazing. Buck has a small mistake in the thing. He says his great arm relegated him to right field. Well, he could play right field and did, especially in like East-West games or something like that, where you had another great center fielder, but he wasn't relegated to right field. He played center field for most of his career, and the printed material saying that he played left field, he was never a left fielder, I mean, not in any meaningful number of games. And then he hit leadoff, that's another thing that's not really true. He hit leadoff for a few years. Most years he was right in the middle of the order because he was the best bat in the lineup. The editorial comment, even with all of this evidence, he's still underrated in my view. Of course, underrated is subjective, but that's my opinion. Here we have an introduction to his career before the 30s. He made his major Negro League debut in 1923 with the Detroit Stars. He had played 3 years of ball in the Negro Southern League prior to that, been pretty impressive. He had a great rookie season. There's going to be a presentation at the Molloy Conference about his rookie season, which John Graff, I believe, is going to say is one of the greatest rookie seasons in Major League history. He did benefit from a very favorable Mack Park. Mack Park had a very, very short left field line, so if you could pull the ball down the line, you could hit lots of home runs. But he hit home runs on the road, and he hit home runs after he left Mack Park. Another falsehood that's printed about him is that when he left Mack Park, his power converted mostly doubles and triples. He always had lots of doubles and triples power throughout his career, and he still led the league in home runs, I think, 3 times after he left Mack Park. So that wasn't true. Anyway, the second and third bullet points show you what he did in his rookie year. From 24 to 29, he hit .339 or higher. He had OPS marks of 154 or higher. He led the Negro National League in home runs 3 times. That's pretty impressive in my book. In 3 games versus white major leaguers, he went 6-for-14 with 4 extra base hits, 4 runs, and 4 RBIs. Very small sample, but still, again, impressive. Unfortunately, despite how good he was, the Detroit Stars, while competitive most years, never really won anything. Well, they never won anything in the 20s, and they only won a half season title in 1930. The image there is from the web. It's a coin someone created in honor of Turkey Stearns. I have no idea who. I'm not going to comment on the images. They're not really related to the text. I wanted to throw them in. There are so few images of Stearns as a player, no action photos, so I'm not going to comment on them. I'm going to insert a slide with the credits for all the images before this gets published on the web. I should have put it in here, but I didn't put it in my presentation. So 1930, this is the start of this 11-year run. He leaves the Detroit Stars after the 29th season for the Lincoln Giants, plays a half season with them, shows that he can hit Eastern pitching, as you can see. He returns to the Stars in midseason, returns to form with Detroit. St. Louis, the St. Louis Stars ran away with the NNL's first half title. Detroit played even better than St. Louis, which was a powerhouse at, that year. They had Willie Wells, Mule Suttles. They had a great team. And of course, Cool Papa Bell. And Detroit edged out St. Louis to set up a Negro National League Championship Series. And that was Stern's first postseason action. The championship series. This was originally supposed to be a 9-game series. It was truncated after 7 games, after several rainouts, because both teams, well, there's no stated reason it was truncated, but I can tell you that the reason was both teams had exhibition games coming up against white teams that were going to be far more profitable than playing 2 more playoff games in Hamtramck or St. Louis before black fans. It just, the way life was playing white semi-pro teams, especially teams with minor leaguers, you know, minor league ringers, or even major league ringers, was far more profitable than playing a black championship game. Stearns was fabulous in this series. He practically carried the team. You can see his stats there. I would pick him for the LCS MVP, although Willie Wells would likely have gotten it because he had stats that were very, very good, not as good as Stearns, and he was on the winning team. John Holway picked Willie Wells for his series MVP. I will comment, just after saying I wouldn't comment on the images, I want to comment on this image. This is a full-size, life-size portrait of Turkey Stearns done by Ann Arbor, Michigan artist Phil Dewey. It has been exhibited around the Detroit area, and it's a great portrait. So 31, he started the season and played most of the season with the Detroit Stars, and at the end of the season, after the Stars folded in, I believe, mid-August, he went to the Monarchs. So he hit 376 with 201 OPS plus, led the league in homers. As you know, you could lead the Negro Leagues with a small number of homers, single-digit home runs, partly because they weren't big home run hitting years in most cases, unless the ballpark was favorable to it. In this case, he's playing in Hamtramck, where the right field fence is very distant, the left field fence is close, the opposite of Mack Park. He played 16 games with KC. I have no idea why he hit so poorly. Maybe he was just homesick, but he hit .123 with no homers in 16 games. I don't think there was any stretch in his career that was like that. Of course, we don't have the game-by-game data. 32, he's with the American Giants and the Negro Southern League, and he leads them to a pennant. He has a great year at the plate. You can look at his stats. He did lead the NSL in home runs with 4, but I know there are lots of NSL box scores out there. He might not be the ultimate leader. The American Giants won the first half. They met the Elite Giants for the NSL championship. They had a really exciting 7-game series, of which only 2 box scores have been found. But Stearns was performing similar heroics in that series to what he did in 1930. He was clearly MVP of that series. In 33, Stearns with the American Giants again. Again, he has another terrific year. The Giants overall were a half game back of the Crawfords, but the Giants won the first half. The second half wasn't completed, and league founder and president Gus Greenlee awarded the championship outright to the Crawfords without a playoff. That pissed off a lot of people, mostly in Detroit, but there was no appealing it, essentially, and so there was no playoff, even though the American Giants won the first half title. 33-39, I stuck in something about the East-West All-Star Games. Stearns was selected for 5 East-West All-Star teams in 8 years they were played while he was playing. In the 33 game, the first one, he played center field and batted leadoff for the West, going 2-for-5, double run RBI. He never played well, or he never hit well in an East-West game after that. He was 32 in that game. He was 38 when he made his final All-Star appearance. He was in the starting lineup 4 of the 5 games. Overall, though, he hit just .211. But as I'm sure most of you know, it's not uncommon for great hitters they have really poor All-Star Game stats because you have great pitchers and they don't have to worry about pitching tomorrow, and they can cycle in one great pitcher after another. So 34, he's with the American Giants. Again, had a terrific season, OPS plus of 192. By the way, the reason I'm focusing on batting average and OPS plus is OPS plus is a good way to cut the analytics down to size so I can get through the presentation. And batting average is, of course, what was important back then. It was, you know, almost everything was batting average, so I have to reference that. Chicago went to a playoff league championship series against Philadelphia, and in that LCS, Stearns outdid himself yet again. However, the American Giants lost to the Philadelphia Stars 4-3. And again, I'm going to violate my rule. I'm not going to talk about the images. This is a cartoon sketch that was in the Defender about Turkey Stearns that I found a couple of years ago. And if you can read the text, it's really fascinating to see what they thought about him at that time in Chicago. I don't know how many people have seen that. I hadn't seen it before, and the family, the daughters and granddaughter, hadn't seen it when I sent it to them. 34, Stearns played in the Denver Post Tournament. Probably most of you know the story of the Denver Post Tournament. Very prestigious semi-pro tournament. The Monarchs entered. They lost the championship game to House of David because House of David had, Satchel Paige pitching for them. Turkey Stearns, I can't really say that he's a ringer. I wanted to call him a ringer. I said no, because in a way the Monarchs are ringers in this, you know, land of white semi-pro teams. You have this all-world black professional team. But back then, the Negro Leagues teams were considered semi-pro, so by white people, most white people. Anyway, Turkey performed really well, made a spectacular catch, got a watch. He got a watch for being the best all-around player in that tournament. So his postseason up through here had been spectacular. 35, the American Giants weren't very good. He had another great year, but it, you know, didn't put them in the postseason. 36 with the Philadelphia Stars is the only full season in the East. He had 352 OPS of 150. Considering his age, I'd say that's pretty good. And considering the fact that most people think the Eastern clubs were stronger and the Eastern leagues were overall stronger than the Western leagues, I think that demonstrates that he would have been a superstar in the East if he had spent his career there. He finished among the league leaders in four or five major batting categories. Of course, that's true almost every year. I didn't even bother to count them except for leading the league in home runs. He was almost always among the league leaders in batting average in the top 10, slugging percentage, on base percentage, RBIs, home runs, any stat you can think of for batting, he would be among the league leaders almost every year. At 37, we have the formation of the Negro American League. The Detroit Stars come back. It's really not the old Stars. It's a new team that was a former semi-pro club. It's a very weak team. Stearns was head and shoulders above most of his teammates. He actually ended up managing a few games at the end, late in the year, because the team was in turmoil. He hit very well from the games we know about, and then he left for Chicago after the Detroit Stars folded. They weren't very good. Chicago won the Negro American League second half, but then they got crushed in the LCS by the Monarchs, 4-1. That was the first postseason series that Stearns performed poorly. 38, Stearns had his worst year by my reckoning, hitting only .264, although he still had an above average OPS. Playing for both the Monarchs and the American Giants. The American Giants had the third best record overall, the Monarchs with the best overall, but neither won either half of the season, so neither one advanced to the postseason. 39, Stearns returns to form, even though he's now 38 years old. The Monarchs finished 46-25, win the first half, go to battle the St. Louis Stars for the league pennant, and they defeat St. Louis 4-1. Stearns' batting average in the LCS was poor, but he had a 171 OPS plus. Not his vintage superstar performance in the postseason, but pretty damn good. 1940. This is his last year in the major Negro Leagues. He's now 39. He had a 262 BA, but a nice 152 OPS plus in 36 games. Led the league in home runs with 5. Again, there are a lot of box scores to be found, hopefully. The Monarchs finished first in both halves of the season, so there was no playoff. So Stern did not have a chance to show his postseason stuff in his last year in the Major Negro Leagues. So of these 11 seasons, Stern's played for 7 postseason or pennant-winning teams. And I have to qualify it both ways, because if, like the Monarchs in 40, they won both halves of the season, so there is no postseason. Stearns was part of the key member of 3 pennant-winning teams, 32 NSL, 39 and 40 NAL. His clubs won 3 halves of split season, did 30, 34, and 37, but then lost the league championship series. I think they're pretty good teams, so it was no dishonor to lose. In 33, the American Giants won the first half, but then got jobbed out of a playoff by Gus Greenlee, as I commented earlier. And just a reminder, of course, it's now very easy to make the playoffs. Back then, it wasn't easy. At most, 2 teams would play in the postseason for each league that year. And then, of course, in the 40s, when there was a Negro World Series, and in the 20s, then you would advance to the Negro World Series, but only 2 teams per league. It's old school baseball. So here he is now. He retires after the 40 season. It's not well known. I believe I'm the first one to figure this out. Stearns retired after 1940, even though there was a report he was in the Monarchs spring camp in 41, because the United Auto Workers had organized Ford Motor Company. Ford was the last of the big 3 Detroit companies to unionize, and he could no longer just leave and come back at the whim of a foreman. If he left his job to play baseball in April, then he would not have gotten his job back in the fall under union rules and that. So there, I finally, after years of digging, found a quote from him where he said that he didn't want to give up his job in the auto factory. And the union had won an election, an organizing election that spring, so he would not have known this at the end of the previous season, which is why I believe there's no announcement that this was, 1940 was his last season. No announcement that he's retiring, nothing like that. Post-baseball life, he worked at Ford's, as they say in Detroit, at Ford's Rouge plant from 1937 to 1964 when he retired. Hardly anyone in the UAW knew anything about him. They never did anything. When he was elected to the Hall of Fame in 2000, they had a 1-page article in the UAW Solidarity magazine about Stern's career. He did, in 1979, go to the first Negro Leagues Players Reunion in Kentucky. This photo that I have up here is iconic. In my view, it's the best photo about the Negro Leagues ever taken. I know that's a heavy statement to make. I'm going to say that in my presentation at the Molloy Conference in a week and a half. I think this photo just shows the poignancy, the tragedy, the dignity, and the determination of the Negro Leagues all in one photo. Cooperstown comes calling for him 21 years too late. I'm still angry about that, so is the family. Although at least I will say Nettie Stearns, his widow, got to go to Cooperstown and hang out with Sparky Anderson and everybody in Cooperstown. And she and the family, the 2 daughters, had a great time. So that was something. In conclusion, well, I pretty much said this. Stearns had a career OPS plus of 173. He was first or second on his clubs amongst the regular players in that key metric. You all know about John Holway. John's really terrific Complete Negro Leagues book published about 22 years ago. He picked Stearns as a 1932 NSL Championship Series MVP, and he also picked Stearns for 4 Player of the Year awards. John didn't pick MVP awards, he picked Player of the Year awards. 4 of them in Stearns' career, 1 in the 20s, 3 in the 30s. Jim Riley, former Sabre president, author of the incomparable biographical encyclopedia of black baseball, he picked Stearns as his ex post facto MVP in 32 in the NSL and 39 in the Negro American League. That was not in Jim's biographical book. Jim made those picks for me when I did my ESPN baseball encyclopedia with Pete Palmer. I asked him to make those picks of MVP, Cy Young, and Rookie of the Year awards for the major Negro leagues, and he picked them. But I did not ask Jim, and he did not pick Champion Series MVPs. So by one count, Turkey Stearns won 3 MVPs in that 11-year stretch. Another count, he won 2. Either way, he won two championship series MVPs in my view, although I note here that Holway passed over Stearns in the 32 NSL LC, excuse me, the 1930 NNL LCS. And Willie Wells had a great series, and his team won, but Stearns' stats were substantially better. Here is Turkey Stearns 300 Club. I am the founder and president of the Friends of Historic Hamtramck Stadium. We programmed that field. This year we're gonna have 200 events on the historic field. We led the charge to save it and then restore it. And I'm about to launch a fundraising campaign called the Turkey Stearns 300 Club. And then here is a plug for my nonprofit. If you want more information, there's the URL. That's the Friends of Historic Hamtramck Stadium website. And I wanted to show you that we had t-shirts printed in five languages for for the Friends a few years back. English, Polish, because Hamtramck is historically a Polish-American city. Bangla, because it is a very large Bangladeshi immigrant community now, and Arabic, because it had a very large Muslim population. In fact, it's believed to be the first Muslim-majority city in the United States, has an all-Muslim city council now and mayor, and majority Muslim school board. Even the school board may be all Muslim. And so the Yemeni Muslim community and the Bangladeshi community are the two largest ethnic groups in Hamtramck. And I think that's it. That's all she wrote. How am I doing on time? Four minutes? Okay.
Good show, Gary.
Thanks, simple... Chuck. Your check's in the mail.
I appreciate that. So just a simple question. Where would you rank Turkey Stearns among all the hitters in Negro League history, excepting, of course, Willie Mays and Hank Aaron and those guys?
Yeah. For my ESPN Baseball Encyclopedia, mine and Pete Palmer's, I don't want to leave Pete out. I asked Jim Riley to rank the top 100. Of course, it's just Jim's opinion, but Jim is one of the foremost experts. He put Stearns like 19th. But that would be also including 6 pitchers, I think. So he would have put him 13th. Not in the elite category with Gibson and Leonard and Willie Wells, Pop Lloyd. I think Jim underrated him because, and I've been talking with Clem Hamilton in St. Louis about this. I mean, it's hard for me to imagine Cool Papa Bell, who everyone puts in the top 10, being better than Turkey Stearns when Stearns was... by everyone's estimation and observation, a great outfielder and could steal a lot of bases. So even if Cool Papa stole 40 more bases a year in a 154 game season, there's no way that could equal the 30 or 40 more home runs Stearns would have hit than Cool Papa Bell.
Right.
And so I don't see how he's not better than Cool Papa Bell. I would put him up in the category behind Gibson, because I'm not putting anyone in Gibson's category.
Right.
I'd put him in the category with Charleston, Leonard, Wells, those guys.
Great.
Some people are going to say that's controversial because a lot of people believe Oscar Charleston's the greatest player who ever lived, and I think that's a good argument.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that people forget that he played first base for 40% of his career. Stearns played center field until he was done. That's pretty impressive.
Okay, great. Good insight. That one's free of charge.
Okay, thanks. Because the check's already been mailed, so you're not getting a second one.
Hi. I've done some, looking at the statistics that came out since the Negro League became major leagues in the eye of baseball. It seems to me that Turkey Stearns stands up against anybody's career as a hitter.
Thank you.
And
but you're not getting paid, even though I paid Chuck.
No, in trying to figure out, how to take the statistics as they are and then sort of extrapolate them or normalize them to something, I would venture to say that Turkey Stearns belongs in the top 10 of all hitters in both AL, NL, Negro Leagues, whatever.
Yeah,
I think that could be supported, actually. But my question is,
Given
that on some objective level, or subjective, depending on how you want to look at it, he is a great player, why is it that he comes as a surprise to people who hear about the Negro Leagues for the first time? They've heard about Gibson, they've heard about Charleston, they've heard about Willie Wells, they've heard about Cool Papa Bell. But Turkey Stearns just kind of sneaks up on you.
Yeah.
Why is that?
You're very perceptive, and we should talk afterward. How much time do I have? A minute? Okay, so I'm going to have to be really short. Adam Dorowski asked me the same question the other day. It's a very long answer. Basically, he never talked. He was a very private guy. He never spoke about himself. He never bragged or touted his accomplishments. He didn't talk to the media. He didn't go out drinking and whoring with the most of the guys on the team after the games, or maybe just chasing the ladies. I shouldn't say that. They might not have been paying. He would go to his hotel or go for a walk. And all of that, if you know the saga of Lou Whitaker, means he wasn't going to get the attention he deserved. I think of him as, except for his personality, the personality are entirely different, like Ken Griffey Jr. in terms of his greatness, or maybe sort of a left-handed version of Willie Mays. Again, personality is different, and I'm not saying he was as great as Mays. I do think he deserved a lot more attention. He also didn't play in major media markets for most of his career. He did play in Chicago for some years, but Detroit and KC were not big markets. If you know the black newspapers, Kansas City Call is the only major black newspaper of consequence in that era that hasn't been digitized yet. So while he did get, and there was no black newspaper in Detroit for most of his career, which means he didn't have a hometown newspaper cheering him on. He did get a lot of ink in the Defender and the Courier, of course, but very little ink on the East, in the newspapers in the East. So that's a partial answer, but I'll have to leave it at that.
Thank you.
Cecilia?
Just one quick thing I wanted to say. Great presentation, and thank you so much for being a great example of putting batting average in a historical context and then using OPS plus as your actual measure of sort of offensive production. And I want to see more historians doing that when making historical presentations, because as we know, batting average isn't everything.
It isn't, but back then it was almost everything. You hit
exactly.
260, even with an OPS of 150, you didn't have a good year.
Yeah, don't quit using it, because it was historically important and in context, but yes, thanks so much.
Real quick things. First, tremendous job with Hamtramck Stadium. I was up there, I guess, a few years before you rebuilt it, and I've seen the pictures. It's amazing. So congratulations on that, and thank you for that work. And why did he only make 5 of the 7 East-West games? I think
he's at the end of his career, and there were a lot of great players, and he just didn't get put on the squad 2 years. I mean, I think is pretty impressive considering how old he was. He started at 32, he ended at 38 in his last appearance, and I said he started 4 of the 5 games. So, I mean, if these games had been in the 20s, he would have been on the East-West team. He would have been on one of the All-Star teams every year, and he probably would have started every year.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, everyone. I appreciate it.